4. Out of the night sky from the north, rushing far ahead of its sound, seen at first as just another star, a plane approached Kariba. The anti-aircraft gunner intercom sounded. The plane was friendly and requested permission to land. Johnny went to watch it set down. The door opened and somebody jumped out. The face was a white blur in the night. Johnny peered more closely. Bandages. Somebody with his face totally bandaged. A finger pointed at Johnny's beard.
The very thing.
It was Dunnell Dean. They swatted each other happily. Then Dunnell Dean pushed Johnny back into better light and looked at him.
The very thing. Somebody cut your beard half off, and mine's burned half off. Make an appointment for me with your barber.
Did you get shot down? Said Johnny, looking a little anxiously at the swath of bandages on his face.
No, laddie, don't be insulting, said Dunnell Dean. What Bulbard or Draken or Hockner could shoot down the ace of all aces? No, Johnny boy, it was helping fight fire. That's not too bad a burn, but you know Dr. Allen. Never happy unless he swaddled you up like an innocent babe.
How is it up there? Said Johnny.
Bad. We got the fire out, but that's all you can say for it. Dwight and Thor are trying to open tunnels, but the rock slides. There's lots of hope, but that's all I can give you. Say, did that small grey man come back here? Is that his ship over there?
Was he at Edinburgh?
Oh, that he was. Went all around bothering everybody, asking questions, got in everybody's way. And then he seemed to get what he was looking for, and went swooshing up to Aberdeen, almost got himself shot down. He was looking for the king, you know, chief of Clanfergus.
How is he, the chief? Said Johnny.
Well, he's a bleeder. You know, doesn't stop bleeding once he's cut. I'm always telling him to stay out of wars. They're unhealthy. Anyway, we found him outside and rushed him to the Aberdeen hospital and they gave him transfusions. This small grey man tried to get in to see him, and of course the gillies threw him out. But then Dr. Allen got cornered by him. Seems like this guy,
he indicated the ship where the lights were flashing,
has been collecting books and libraries all over the place. He pictographs them, and he got Dr. Allen to tell him what was wrong with the chief, and they looked it up in a lot of old man books. And Dr. Allen found there was a compound called vitamin K that made blood coagulate, and they synthesized some, and what do you know? The bleeding stopped. The chief's recovering. What is this small grey man? A doctor?
No, said Johnny. He's the sector branch manager of the Galactic Bank. I'll tell you more later, but he was up there making sure this planet had a government.
Well, that was a nice thing to do, anyway, said Dunnell Dean.
Johnny was glad for the chief, but he sure was beginning to feel surrounded by the bankers. He didn't tell Dunnell Dean they were about to foreclose on them. You see Storm along? Dunnell Dean shook his head.
Let's get Sir Robert. He's dead to the world in the plane.
And Sir Robert really was dead to the world. Singed and gray-faced where his skin wasn't blackened with soot, his hands torn, his clothes in burned rags, Sir Robert looked exactly what he was, an old man who had been going through hell for days without rest. They tried to lift and carry him between them, but the old war chief was a very heavy man, especially when dead weight. They got a mine cart and wheeled him into the hospital. Johnny got the nurse up and she examined Sir Robert. He was not injured except for his hands. She gave him a shot of B-complex, and he never stirred at the punch of the needle. Mr. Tsung and his family were suddenly up and hovering around, and they ran off to get things organized. Shortly, they were giving Sir Robert a bath and trimming the burned areas in his beard and hair so they looked more even. They soon had him in a bed. He had never opened his eyes. Johnny went back to the hospital where he had left Dunnell Dean, and found him sitting in a chair, sound asleep, while the nurse changed his face bandages. The burns were not disfiguring. His beard sure was tattered. Johnny stopped the nurse from putting on fresh bandages and called Mr. Tsung's daughter, who came in with her scissors and neatened the Scot by cutting his beard like Johnny's. Johnny had hoped Dunnel Dean could spell him in ops while he went to look for Stormalong. But Dunnel Dean was really in no condition to do anything but sleep. Johnny turned him over to the Tsung family, and they gave him a bath and put him to bed. It must be hell in Edinburgh. Johnny got on the radio to Russia. They had had several thousand people stuffed into that old base. Smoke or no smoke, some of them must be functional. There were 250 Chinese there from North China. There were the Siberians and the Sherpas. Tinny got some of her own messages in. The rest of the monks and the Buddhist library, the Chinese library and such things were safe. She had to run out and tell Chang Wan and Mr. Tsung. Late at night, it might be, in both Tashkent and Edinburgh, but Johnny started shuffling people. The most vital question now was, where was Stormalong? Where was McAdam? The only thing they ever got out of Luxembourg was a girl saying something that sounded like, "Je ne comprends pas." And that sure didn't spell Stormalong or the Scot banker. Was he going to have to handle this foreclosure thing with no help? 5. The treaty signing, Johnny was told, would be that afternoon. They came, Lord Dom and Dries Glotten, to the ops room. Dries seemed extraordinarily pleased. "I hear," he said, "that the Earth representative arrived last night. Be sure he is at the signing." Johnny glanced at his watch. It was mid-morning. He went to the room where they had put both the old war chief and Dunnel Dean. Dunnel Dean was up and dressed and seemed bright enough for all his bandaged face. Sir Robert was just groggily opening his eyes, so Johnny took Dunnel Dean back to ops. "I want you to take over this post," said Johnny. "I'll stay for the signing, but right after that I'm getting out of here to search for Stormalong." He spent some time genning Dunnel Dean in, and then went back to Sir Robert. The old Scot was as grumpy as a bear. He was sitting on the edge of the bed with nothing much to cover his bony limbs and eating something Chief Chang Wan had brought him. "Treaty signing," he grumped between bites. "Waste of time. They'll never keep any treaties. This is a beautiful planet here and they want it. I belong right up in Edinburgh helping dig those poor people out. Oh, you were right, McTyler. They all should have been at Cornwall." Johnny let him finish his food and then, while he was having some tea, went out and got an atmosphere projector. And although Sir Robert spent much of his time muttering and railing about being absent from Scotland, Johnny briefed him carefully on events and what they could possibly do. When he had finished, he stood back. "I'm no diplomat," said Sir Robert. "I prove that. And I'm no lawyer and I'm no banker. 'Tis a thin chance, but I'll do what you say." That was all Johnny wanted. In mid-afternoon, they went to the conference room. Sir Robert was in his regimentals, Johnny in his helmet and black tunic. Nobody paid them much attention. The emissaries had drawn up the treaty Johnny had heard voted, and they had it on a big scroll, laid out in such a way that each emissary could walk up to the table where it lay, sign it, affix his seals, get the signature and pattern or print attested by the bank, and then go back to his seat. It was a sort of parade. Dries Glotten and Faljapan were the only ones who stood at the table. Sir Robert sat and fumed about wasting time, but he did so only in a very low voice and only to Johnny. They signed and signed. It took them almost an hour. Earth was the last signature, and Sir Robert went up and put down his name, got a match and melted some wax, and then smashed his big seal ring onto it. Dries drew a bank trace around it and held it up. "I hereby certify," said Dries, "that the Galactic Bank has attested the authenticity of this Treaty of Kariba, Earth. It is complete. May I suggest that immediate copies of it be transmitted to all ships concerned?" He spread the treaty out, pulled a small picto tracer from his breast pocket, and scanned it down the scroll. Johnny passed it to Donald Dean and Ops for transmission and copies for themselves and all delegates and the bank. The Lord of the Havens stood up.
I have received word that all prisoners were put down at the designated place and signed for by the Earth representative there.
Dries looked at Johnny. Word had come from Thor in mid-morning. There had been 7 pilots, 3 Russian soldiers, 2 Sherpas, and 1 Scot, 13 in all. They had been in fair condition. But since none of these invading ships had the kind of food terrestrials ate, they were suffering badly from starvation, and certainly would have died in months-long space travel. They had been rushed to Aberdeen for intravenous feeding and treatment of minor injuries. Thor had had a row with the Havn officer in charge of the landing, for one of the pilots remembered another pilot he was sure the Tallneps had picked up. After sending the first group off, Thor had stood by, and sure enough, the Tallneps had another pilot, a German. It had taken 2 hours to get him set down. They swore that was all. Thor had then believed them. Our officer attests we have the prisoners back, said Johnny. The emissaries who had ships in orbit then passed their orders to their respective commanders. There was a wait. Then Donald Dean came in to report that, according to sightings from Russia, the whole flotilla in orbit had flamed up, gotten into formation around the Tallnep vessels, and left. The phenomena of their getting very big and vanishing had been observed. Radio contact was lost. The whole group went outside, and Angus fired a spitting, naked, and chained slime to the slave market in Crete. The emissaries came back to the conference room. Footnote. There was a curious aftermath to this treaty. Lord Slime arrived back in Tallnep, used the owners of the Crete newspaper, the leading Tallnep journal Midnight Fang, who were incensed at the loss of their ace reporter, Arsabagger, to conduct a smear campaign on Captain Rogodeter Snow, blaming him for the entire disaster, Slime claiming it was Snow's false testimony, which had brought about Slime's and Tallnep's disgrace. Rogodeter Snow was set upon in the streets of Crete by a mob which bit him to death. A relative of the slain officer, Adjutor Snow, in his turn blamed Lord Slime for the attack and murder. He and a group of fleet officers waited until Lord Slime next addressed the government, and then blew up Slime and the entire assembled House of Plunder in an incident which became known as the Great Slime Plot. Soon thereafter, its fleet gone and no longer able to engage in the slave trading which had formed the basis of its economy, Tallnep was unable to meet its indemnity payments. Its income tax department, always corrupt, fell behind in its bribe quotas to higher officials and, one by one, seized Tallnep citizens for tax delinquency, had their fangs drawn, sterilized them, and sold them into slavery. The Havns eventually bought the planet and completed the extermination, and the Tallneps became extinct. Excerpted from Galactic Bank Customer Service Summaries, Volume 4356279A. End of footnote. Sir Robert thought that was all. He was sitting in the front row, grumbling. Dries Glotton smiled. He walked over to Sir Robert, and he drew a thick paper from his pocket. My lords, said Dries to the assemblage, are witnesses to the fact that there is no further dispute over the ownership of Earth. The government of the planet is intact. The king is recovering. The Earth representative here is legally empowered to act for the government. The title to the planet is clear, he said triumphantly. Emissary of Earth, I hereby serve you with a notice of delinquency of payments. If, after a discussion, but in no case later than 1 week, this mortgage remains unhandled or unpaid, it will result in foreclosure on the planet and all its assets and peoples. He dropped the paper in Sir Robert's lap. Consider yourself legally served with due process. Sir Robert sat there staring at the paper. Dries Glotton smiled a shark-like smile at Johnny. Thank you very much for getting him here and into the open so that he could legally be given this paper. In addition to being branch manager, I also usually act as my own collections department. He went over to a chair and picked up a foot-high stack of large booklets. He returned to the platform and addressed the assembled emissaries. "Honored lords," said Dries, "the primary business of this conference, to clear the title of Earth, is complete. However, I know each one of you has full authority to acquire territories for your state. There are other means than war." The lord shrugged. "War was the surer method," said one. "The mental health of the people depended upon war," said another. "How was the state to demonstrate its power without war?" said Brow. "The Galactic Bank would have a hard time surviving without making war loans," quipped Dom. "Rulers only became famous when they prosecuted war," laughed another. They were all in a jovial mood. Johnny listened to all this with a kind of horror. The impersonal cruelty of large government was brought home to him.
"Get on with it, Your Excellency," chuckled Faljapan. "We all know what you're going to say."
Dry smiled and began to hand out the booklets.
"Here are some brochures I made up while waiting for a clear title. You will find data like mass, surface area, weather, number of seas, heights of mountains, and you will also find some scenic views. It is a very pretty planet, really. It would support several billion people, providing they could breathe air. But most of you have air-breathing colonies that even now are overcrowded."
He finished handing the brochures about, and the lords began to scan through the colored pictures.
"You have collateral and credit, and many of you cash. It would take a minimum mercenary force to occupy it, for, as you know, its defenses are quite antiquated, and it has minimum personnel to resist an invasion. Conveyance of title would include all people and assets. Therefore, should you care to linger, there will be an auction of this planet as a bank foreclosure and repossession in the next 7 days, unless suitable arrangements for payments of its debts are made. Which hardly seems likely, for they are without other adequate cash or collateral or credit. Thank you, my lords."
They were all chattering to one another and examining the brochure and seemed quite in a holiday mood. It was obvious they would stay around, even those from distant universes. Johnny said to Dries Glotten, "So it was all just a question of money." Dries smiled.
"We have not the slightest feeling of hostility toward you. Banking is banking and business is business. One must pay one's obligations. Any child knows that."
The banker turned to Sir Robert.
"Arrange a meeting for negotiations as soon as possible, will you? Then we can get this thing over with and done."
Sir Robert and Johnny walked out.